Side 4, Sphere, by Michael Crichton. Continuing on page 143. He waited, but Harry said nothing further. He just stared at the carpeted floor. "Do you remember opening the door?" Harry said nothing. "How did you open the door, Harry?" Harry looked up at Norman. "You were all supposed to leave, to go back to the surface. You weren't supposed to stay." "How did you open the door, Harry?" There was a long silence. "I opened it." He sat up straight, his hands at his sides. He seemed to be remembering, reliving it. "And then?" "I went inside." "And what happened inside?" "It was beautiful." "What was beautiful?" "The foam," Harry said. And then he fell silent again, staring vacantly into space. "The foam?" Norman prompted. "The sea. The foam. Beautiful." Was he talking about the lights? Norman wondered. The swirling pattern of lights? "What was beautiful, Harry?" "Now don't kid me," Harry said. "Promise you won't kid me." "I won't kid you." "You think I look the same?" "Yes, I do." "You don't think I changed at all?" "No, not that I can see." "Do you think you've changed?" "I don't know. Maybe. "Did something happen in the sphere to change you?" "You don't understand about the sphere." "Then explain it to me," Norman said. "Nothing happened in the sphere." "You were in the sphere for 3 hours. Nothing happened. Nothing ever happens inside the sphere. It's always the same inside the sphere." "What's always the same?" "The foam?" "The foam is always different. The sphere is always the same." "I don't understand," Norman said. "I know you don't," Harry said. He shook his head. "What can I do?" "Tell me some more." "There isn't any more." "Then tell me again." "It won't help," Harry said. "Do you think you'll be leaving soon?" "Barnes says not for several days." "I think you should leave soon. Talk to the others. Convince them. Make them leave." "Why, Harry?" "I can't be... I don't know." Harry rubbed his eyes and lay back on the bed. "You'll have to excuse me," he said, "but I'm very tired. Maybe we can continue this some other time. Talk to the others, Norman. Get them to leave. It's dangerous to stay here." And he lay down in the bunk and closed his eyes. Changes. "He is sleeping," Norman told them. "He's in shock. He's confused. But he seems basically intact."
"What did he tell you?"
Ted said. "About what happened in there?" "He's quite confused," Norman said. "But he's recovering. When we first found him, he didn't even remember his name. Now he does. He remembers my name. He remembers where he is. He remembers he went into the sphere. I think he remembers what happened inside the sphere, too. He just isn't telling."
"Great," Ted said.
"He mentioned the sea and the foam, but I wasn't clear what he meant by that."
"Look outside," Tina said, pointing to the portholes.
Norman had an immediate impression of lights, thousands of lights filling the blackness of the ocean, and his first response was unreasoning terror. The lights in the sphere were coming out to get them. But then he saw each of the lights had a shape and were moving, wriggling. They pressed their faces to the portholes, looked.
"Squid," Beth said finally. "Bioluminescent squid."
"Thousands of them."
"More," she said. "I'd guess at least 500,000, all around the habitat."
"Beautiful."
"The size of the school is amazing," Ted said.
"Impressive, but not really unusual," Beth said. The fecundity of the sea is very great compared with the land. The sea is where life began and where intense competition among animals first appeared. One response to competition is to produce enormous numbers of offspring. Many sea animals do that. In fact, we tend to think that animals came out onto the land as a positive step forward in the evolution of life. But the truth is, the first creatures were really driven out of the ocean. They were just trying to get away from the competition. And you can imagine, when the first fish amphibians climbed up the beach and poked their heads up to look out at the land and saw this vast dry land environment without any competition at all. It must have looked like the promised... Beth broke off, turned to Barnes. Quick, where do you keep specimen nets? I don't want you going out there. I have to, Beth said. Those squid have 6 tentacles. So? There's no known species of 6-tentacled squid. This is an undescribed species. I must collect samples. Barnes told her where the equipment locker was, and she went off. Norman looked at the school of squid with renewed interest. The animals were each about 1 foot long and seemed to be transparent. The large eyes of the squid were clearly visible in the bodies, which glowed a pale blue. In a few minutes, Beth appeared outside, standing in the midst of the school, swinging her net, catching specimens. Several squid angrily squirted clouds of ink. Cute little things, Ted said. You know, the development of squid ink is very interesting. What do you say to squid for dinner? Levy said. Hell no, Barnes said. If this is an undiscovered species, we're not going to eat it. The last thing I need is everybody sick from food poisoning. Very sensible, Ted said. I never liked squid anyway. Interesting mechanism of propulsion, but rubbery texture. At that moment there was a buzz as one of the monitors turned itself on. As they watched, the screen rapidly filled with numbers. 371-830-1606-0618-0832-9033-05-182-204-261-01308. 301-621-371-604-083-162-118-223-0131-304-32-00-3212. 525-263-203-262-930-132-104-261-037-1830-1606-180-8213. 229-030-05-182-204-261-01308-301-62-137-1604-08-3062.
Where's that coming from? Ted said. The surface?
Barnes shook his head. We've cut direct contact with the surface.
Then is it being transmitted underwater in some way?
No, Dina said. It's too fast for underwater transmission.
Is there another console in the habitat?
No.
How about DH-7?
DH-7's empty now. The divers have gone.
Then where'd it come from?
Barnes said, it looks random to me.
Tina nodded.
It may be a discharge from a temporary buffer memory somewhere in the system. When we switched over to internal diesel power. That's probably it, Barnes said. Buffer discharge on switchover.
I think you should keep it, Ted said, staring at the screen. Just in case it's a message.
A message from where?
From the sphere.
Hell, Barnes said. It can't be a message.
How do you know?
Because there's no way a message can be transmitted. We're not hooked up to anything. Certainly not to the sphere. It's got to be a memory dump from somewhere inside our own computer system.
How much memory have you got?
Fair amount. 10 gig or something like that.
Maybe the helium's getting to the chips, Tina said. Maybe it's a saturation effect. I still think you should keep it, Ted said.
Norman had been looking at the screen. He was no mathematician, but he'd looked at a lot of statistics in his life, searching for patterns in the data. That was something human brains were inherently good at, finding patterns in visual material. Norman couldn't put his finger on it, but he sensed a pattern here. He said, I have the feeling it's not random. Then let's keep it, Barnes said. Tina went forward to the console. As her hands touched the keys, the screen went blank. So much for that, Barnes said. It's gone. Too bad we didn't have Harry to look at it with us.
Yeah, Ted said gloomily. Too bad.
Analysis.
Take a look at this, Beth said. This one is still alive.
Norman was with her in the little biological laboratory near the top of D cylinder. Nobody had been in this laboratory since their arrival because they hadn't found anything living. Now with the lights out, he and Beth watched the squid move in the glass tank. The creature had a delicate appearance. The blue glow was concentrated in stripes along the back and sides of the creature.
Yes, Beth said.
The bioluminescent structures seem to be located dorsally. They're bacteria, of course.
What are?
The bioluminescent areas. Squid can't create light themselves. The creatures that do are bacteria. So the bioluminescent animals in the sea have incorporated these bacteria into their bodies. You're seeing bacteria glowing through the skin.
So it's like an infection?
Yes, in a way. The large eyes of the squid stared. The tentacles moved. And you can see all the internal organs, Beth said. The brain is hidden behind the eye. That sac is the digestive gland, and behind it the stomach, and below that, see it beating, the heart. That big thing at the front is the gonad, and coming down from the stomach, a sort of funnel, that's where it squirts the ink and propels itself.
Is it really a new species? Norman said.
She sighed.
I don't know.
Internally, it is so typical, but fewer tentacles would qualify it as a new species, all right. You're going to get to call it Squidus Bethus? Norman said. She smiled.
Architeuthis Bethus, she said.
Sounds like a dental problem.
Architeuthis Bethus means you need root canal.
How about it, Dr. Halpern? Levy said, poking her head in. Got some good tomatoes and peppers. Be ashamed to waste them.
Are the squid really poisonous?
I doubt it, Beth said. Squid aren't known to be. Go ahead, she said to Levy. I think it'll be okay to eat them. When Levy had gone, Norman said, I thought you gave up eating these things. Just octopi, Beth said. An octopus is cute and smart. Squid are rather unsympathetic. Unsympathetic. Well, they're cannibalistic and rather nasty. She raised an eyebrow. Are you psychoanalyzing me again? No, just curious. As a zoologist, you're supposed to be objective, Beth said. But I have feelings about animals like anybody else. I have a warm feeling about octopi. They're clever, you know. I once had an octopus in a research tank that learned to kill cockroaches and use them as bait to catch crabs. A curious crab would come along, investigate the dead cockroach, and then the octopus would jump out of its hiding place and catch the crab. In fact, an octopus is so smart that the biggest limitation to its behavior is its lifespan. An octopus lives only 3 years, and that's not long enough to develop anything as complicated as a culture or civilization. Maybe if octopi lived as long as we do, they would long ago have taken over the world. But squid are completely different. I have no feelings about squid, except I don't really like them. He smiled. Well, he said, at least you finally found some life down here. You know what's funny, she said. Remember how barren it was out there? Nothing on the bottom? Sure, very striking. Well, I went around the side of the habitat to get these squid. And there are all sorts of sea fans on the bottom. Beautiful colors, blues and purples and yellows, some of them quite large. Think they just grew? No, they must always have been in that spot, but we never went over there. I'll have to investigate it later. I'd like to know why they are localized in that particular place next to the habitat. Norman went to the porthole. He had switched on the exterior habitat lights, shining onto the bottom. He could indeed see many large sea fans, purple and pink and blue, waving gently in the current. They extended out to the edge of the light, to the darkness. In a way, Beth said, it's reassuring. We're deep for the majority of oceanic life, which is found in the first 100 feet of water. But even so, this habitat is located in the most varied and abundant marine environment in the world. Scientists had made species counts and had determined that the South Pacific had more species of coral and sponges than anywhere else on Earth. So I'm glad we're finally finding things, she said. She looked at her benches of chemicals and reagents. And I'm glad to finally get to work on something. Harry was eating bacon and eggs in the galley. The others stood around and watched him, relieved that he was all right. And they told him the news. He listened with interest until they mentioned that there had been a large school of squid. Squid? He looked up sharply and almost dropped his fork. Yeah, lots of them, Levy said. I'm cooking up a bunch for dinner. Are they still here? Harry asked. No, they're gone now. He relaxed, shoulders dropping. Something the matter, Harry? Norman said. I hate squid, Harry said. I can't stand them. I don't care for the taste myself, Ted said. Terrible, Harry said, nodding. He resumed eating his eggs. The tension passed. Then Tina shouted from D cylinder, I'm getting them again. I'm getting the numbers again. 00032125252632 032629301321 04261037 18301606180 82132 29033005 18220426101308301621371 16004 08301621 18202 03301313043 2 03261037 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137 18301602137
01321 What do you think, Harry? Barnes said, pointing to the screen.
Is this what you got before? Harry said.
Looks like it, except the spacing is different.
Because this is definitely non-random, Harry said. It's a single sequence repeated over and over. Look, starts here, goes to here, then repeats.
01321 0462 01321 0462 0362 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0462 01321 0 0322-0322-629, 301-321, 0426-1037, 18-3016-06180-821-32, 29033005, 1-822-0426-1013, 0830-162137, 1604-0830-1621, 1-822-0330-131304-32. Repeat, 0003212525632, 032629, 301321, 0426103718, 3016, 0618082132, 29033005, 1-822, 0426103, 0830162137, 1604, 0830162131, 1-822, 0330131304-32. Repeat, 0003212525632, 032629, 301321, 0426103718, 3016, 0618082132, 29033005, 1-822, 04261013, 08301621371, 1604, 08301621, 1822, 03301313432. Repeat. 00032125252632, 032629, 301321, 04261037, 18, 3016, 06180821322, 29033005, 1822, 04261013, 08301621371, 1604, 08301621, 1822, 03301313432. Repeat. 00032125252632. 03269. 301321. 04261037. 18. 3016. 06180821332. 29033005. 1822. 04261013. 08301621137. 1604. 08301621. 1822. 03301313432. Repeat. 00032125252632. 03269. 301321.
He's right, Tina said.
Fantastic, Barnes said. Absolutely incredible for you to see it like that.
Ted drummed his fingers on the console impatiently.
Elementary, my dear Barnes, Harry said. That part is easy. The hard part is, what does it mean?
Surely it's a message, Ted said.
Possibly it's a message, Harry said. It could also be some kind of discharge from within the computer, the result of a programming error or a hardware glitch. We might spend hours translating it, only find it says copyright Acme Computer Systems, Silicon Valley, or something similar.
Well, Ted said,
the greatest likelihood is that this series of numbers originates from within the computer itself, Harry said. But let me give it a try.
Tina printed out the screen for him.
I'd like to try, too, Ted said quickly.
Tina said, certainly, Dr. Fielding, and printed out a second sheet.
If it's a message, Harry said, it's most likely a simple substitution code, like an ASCII code. It would help if we could run a decoding program on the computer. Can anybody program this thing?
They all shook their heads.
Can you?
Barnes said.
No. And I suppose there's no way to transmit this to the surface? The NSA code-breaking computers in Washington would take about 15 seconds to do this.
Barnes shook his head.
No contact. I wouldn't even put up a radio wire on a balloon. The last report, they have 40-foot waves on the surface. Snap the wire right away.
So we're isolated?
We're isolated.
I guess it's back to the old pencil and paper. I always say traditional tools are best, particularly when there's nothing else. And left the room.
He seems to be in a good mood, Barnes said.
I'd say a very good mood, Norman said.
Maybe a little too good, Ted said. A little manic?
No, Norman said. Just a good mood.
I thought he was a little high, Ted said.
Let him stay that way, Barnes snorted, if it helps him to crack this code.
I'm going to try too, Ted reminded him.
That's fine, Barnes said. You try too.
Ted.
I'm telling you, this reliance on Harry is misplaced.
Ted paced back and forth and glanced at Norman.
Harry is manic and he's overlooking things, obviously.
Like what?
Like the fact that the printout can't possibly be a discharge from the computer.
How do you know? Norman said.
The processor, Ted said. The processor is a 68090 chip, which means that any memory dump would be in hex.
What's hex?
There are lots of ways to represent numbers, Ted said. The 68090 chip uses base 16 representation called hexadecimal. Hex is entirely different from regular decimal. Looks different.
But the message used 0 through 9, Norman said.
Exactly my point, Ted said. So it didn't come from the computer. I believe it's definitely a message from the sphere. Furthermore, although Harry thinks it is a substitution code, I think it's a direct visual representation.
You mean a picture?
Yes, Ted said. And I think it's a picture of the creature itself. He started searching through sheets of paper. I started with this. Now, here I have translated the message to binary, Ted said. You can immediately sense visual pattern, can't you?
Not really, Norman said.
Well, it is certainly suggestive, Ted said. I'm telling you, all those years at JPL looking at images from the planets, I have an eye for these things. So the next thing I did was go back to the original message and fill in the spaces. I got this.
Uh-huh, Norman said.
I agree, it doesn't look like anything, Ted said. But by changing the screen width, you get this. Proudly, he held up the next sheet.
Yes, Norman said.
Don't tell me you don't see the pattern, Ted said.
I don't see the pattern, Norman said.
Squint at it, Ted said.
Norman squinted.
Sorry. But it is obviously a picture of the creature, Ted said. Look, that's the vertical torso, three legs, two arms. There's no head, so presumably the creature's head is located within the torso itself. Surely you see that, Norman.
Ted.
For once, Harry has missed the point entirely. The message is not only a picture, it's a self-portrait.
Ted. Ted sat back. He sighed.
You're going to tell me I'm trying too hard.
I don't want to dampen your enthusiasm, Norman said.
But you don't see the alien?
Not really, no.
Hell.
Ted tossed the papers aside.
I hate that son of a bitch. He's so arrogant, he makes me so mad. And on top of that, he's young.
You're 40, Norman said. I wouldn't exactly call that over the hill.
For physics it is, Ted said. Biologists can sometimes do important work late in life. Darwin was 50 when he published The Origin of Species. And chemists sometimes do good work when they're older. But in physics, if you haven't done it by 35, the chances are you never will.
But Ted, you're respected in your field. Ted shook his head. I've never done fundamental work. I've analyzed data, I've come to some interesting conclusions, but never anything fundamental. This expedition is my chance to really do something, to really get my name in the books.
Norman now had a different sense of Ted's enthusiasm and energy, that relentlessly juvenile manner. Ted wasn't emotionally retarded, he was driven, and he clung to his youth out of a sense that time was slipping by and he hadn't yet accomplished anything. It wasn't obnoxious, it was sad.
Well, Norman said, the expedition isn't finished yet.
No, Ted said, suddenly brightening. You're right. You're absolutely right. There are more wonderful experiences awaiting us. I just know there are. And they'll come, won't they?
Yes, Ted, Norman said. They'll come.
Beth. Damn it, nothing works. She waved a hand to her laboratory bench. Not a single one of the chemicals or reagents here is worth a damn.
What have you tried? Barnes said calmly.
Zinker formalin, H&E, the other stains. Proteolytic extractions, enzyme breaks. You name it. None of it works. You know what I think? I think that whoever stocked this lab did it with outdated ingredients.
No, Barnes said. It's the atmosphere. He explained that their environment contained only 2% oxygen, 1% carbon dioxide, but no nitrogen at all.
Chemical reactions are unpredictable, he said.
You ought to take a look at Levy's recipe book sometime. It's like nothing you've ever seen in your life. The food looks normal when she's finished, but she sure doesn't make it the normal way.
And the lab?
The lab was stocked without knowing the working depth we would be. If we were shallower, we'd be breathing compressed air and all your chemical reactions would work. They'd just go very fast. But with heliox, reactions are unpredictable. And if they won't go, well...
He shrugged.
What am I supposed to do? She said. The best you can, Barnes said. Same as the rest of us.
Well, all I can really do is gross anatomical analyses. All this bench is worthless.
Then do the gross anatomy.
I just wish we had more lab capability.
This is it, Barnes said. Accept it and go on.
Ted entered the room. "You better take a look outside, everybody," he said, pointing to the portholes. "We have more visitors." The squid were gone. For a moment, Norman saw nothing but the water and the white suspended sediment caught in the lights. "Look down at the bottom." The sea floor was alive, literally alive, crawling and wiggling and tremulous as far as they could see in the lights. "What is that?" Beth said. "It's shrimps, a hell of a lot of shrimps." And she ran to get her net. "Now that's what we ought to be eating," Ted said. "I love shrimp. And those look perfect size, a little smaller than crayfish. Probably delicious. I remember once in Portugal, my second wife and I had the most fabulous crayfish." Norman felt slightly uneasy. "What are they doing here?" "I don't know. What do shrimps do, anyway? Do they migrate?"
"Damned if I know," Barnes said. "I always buy 'em frozen. My wife hates to peel 'em."
Norman remained uneasy, though he could not say why. He could clearly see now that the bottom was covered in shrimps. They were everywhere. Why should it bother him? Norman moved away from the window, hoping his sense of vague uneasiness would go away if he looked at something else. But it didn't go away. It just stayed there, a small, tense knot in the pit of his stomach. He didn't like the feeling at all. "Harry."
"Harry."
"Oh, hi, Norman. I heard the excitement. A lot of shrimps outside. Is that it?"
Harry sat on his bunk, with the paper print out of numbers on his knees. He had a pencil and pad, and the page was covered with calculations, scratch-outs, symbols, arrows.
"Harry,"
Norman said, "what's going on?"
"Damned if I know."
"I'm just wondering why we should suddenly be finding life down here, the squid, the shrimps, when before there was nothing, ever."
"Oh, that. I think that's pretty clear."
"Yes?"
"Sure. What's different between then and now?"
"You've been inside the sphere."
"No, no. I mean, what's different in the outside environment?"
Norman frowned. He didn't grasp what Harry was driving at.
"Well, just look outside," Harry said.
"What could you see before that you can't see now?"
"The grid."
"Uh-huh.
The grid and the divers. A lot of activity and a lot of electricity. I think it's scared off the normal fauna of the area. This is the South Pacific, you know. It ought to be teeming with life."
"And now that the divers are gone, the animals are back?"
"That's my guess."
"That's all there is to it?" Norman said, frowning.
"Why are you asking me?" Harry said. "Ask Beth. She'll give you a definitive answer. But I know animals are sensitive to all kinds of stimuli we don't notice. You can't run God knows how many million volts through underwater cables to light a half-mile grid in an environment that has never seen light before and not expect to have an effect."
Something about this argument tickled the back of Norman's mind. He knew something, something pertinent, but he couldn't get it.
"Harry."
"Yes, Norman. You look a little worried."
"You know, this substitution code is really a bitch. I tell you the truth, I'm not sure I'll be able to crack it. You see, the problem is, if it is a letter substitution, you will need two digits to describe a single letter, because there are 26 letters in the alphabet, assuming no punctuation, which may or may not be included here as well. So when I see a 2 next to a 3, I don't know if it is letter 2 followed by letter 3, or just letter 23. It's taking a long time to work through the permutations, you see what I mean?"
"Harry."
"Yes, Norman."
"What happened inside the sphere?"
"Is that what you're worried about?"
Harry asked.
"What makes you think I'm worried about anything?" Norman asked.
"Your face," Harry said. "That's what makes me think you're worried."
"Maybe I am," Norman said. "But about this sphere?"
"You know, I've been thinking a lot about that sphere."
"And?"
"It's quite amazing. I really don't remember what happened."
"Harry."
"I feel fine. I feel better all the time. Honest to God, my energy's back, headache's gone. And earlier, I remembered everything about that sphere and what was inside it. But every minute that passes, it seems to fade, you know, the way a dream fades. You remember it when you wake up, but an hour later, it's gone."
"Harry."
"I remember that it was wonderful and beautiful. Something about lights, swirling lights. But that's all.
How did you get the door to open?
Oh, that. It was very clear at the time. I remember I had worked it all out. I knew exactly what to do.
What did you do?
I'm sure it will come back to me.
You don't remember how you opened the door?
No. I just remember the sudden insight, the certainty about how it was done. But I can't remember the details. Why, does somebody else want to go in? Ted, probably.
I'm sure Ted would like to go in.
I don't know if that's a good idea. Frankly, I don't think Ted should do it. Think how boring he'll be with his speeches after he comes out. I visited an alien sphere by Ted Fielding. We'd never hear the end of it.
And he giggled. Ted is right, Norman thought. He is definitely manic. There was a speedy, overly cheerful quality to Harry. His characteristic slow sarcasm was gone, replaced by a sunny, open, very quick manner, and a kind of laughing indifference to everything, an imbalance in his sense of what was important. He had said he couldn't crack the code. He had said he couldn't remember what happened inside the sphere, or how he had opened it. And he didn't seem to think it mattered. Harry, when you first came out of the sphere, you seemed worried.
Did I?
Had a brutal headache, I remember that. You kept saying we should go to the surface.
Did I?
Yes, why was that?
God only knows, I was so confused.
You also said it was dangerous for us to stay here.
Harry smiled.
Norman, you can't take that too seriously. I didn't know if I was coming or going. Harry, we need you to remember these things. If things start to come back to you, will you tell me?
Oh, sure, Norman. Absolutely. You can count on me. I'll tell you right away.
The laboratory.
No, Beth said. None of it makes sense. First of all, in areas where fish haven't encountered human beings before, they tend to ignore humans unless they are hunted. The Navy divers didn't hunt the fish. Second, if the divers stirred up the bottom, that'd actually release nutrients and attract more animals. Third, many species of animals are attracted to electrical currents, so if anything, the shrimps and other animals should have been drawn here earlier by the electricity. Not now, with the power off.
She was examining the shrimps under the low-power scanning microscope.
How does he seem?
Harry?
Yes.
I don't know.
Is he okay?
I don't know. I think so.
Still looking through the microscope lens, she said,
Did he tell you anything about what happened inside the sphere?
Not yet.
She adjusted the microscope, shook her head.
I'll be damned.
What is it? Norman said.
Extra dorsal plating.
Meaning?
It's another new species, she said.
Norman said, Shrimpus, Bethus? You're making discoveries hand over fist down here, Beth.
Uh-huh. I checked the sea fans, too, because they seem to have an unusual radial growth pattern. They're a new species as well.
That's great, Beth.
She turned, looked at him.
No, not great. Weird.
She clicked on a high-intensity light, cut open one of the shrimps with a scalpel.
I thought so.
What is it?
Norman, she said, we didn't see any life down here for days, and suddenly in the last few hours we find 3 new species? It's not normal.
We don't know what's normal at 1,000 feet.
I'm telling you, it's not normal.
But Beth, you said yourself that we simply hadn't noticed the sea fans before. And the squid, and the shrimps, can't they be migrating, passing through this area, something like that?
Barnes says they've never had trained scientists living this deep at one site on the ocean floor before. Maybe these migrations are normal, and we just don't know they occur.
I don't think so, Beth said.
When I went out to get these shrimps, I felt their behavior was atypical. For one thing, they were too close together. Shrimps on the bottom maintain a characteristic distance from one another, about 4 feet. These were packed close. In addition, they moved as if they were feeding, but there's nothing to feed on down here.
Nothing that we know of.
Well, these shrimps can't have been feeding. She pointed to the cut animal on the lab bench. They haven't got a stomach.
Are you kidding?
Look for yourself.
Norman looked, but the dissected shrimp didn't mean much to him. It was just a mass of pink flesh. It was cut on a ragged diagonal, not cleanly. She's tired, he thought. She's not working efficiently. We need sleep. We need to get out of here.
The external appearance is perfect, except for an extra dorsal fan at the tail, she said. But internal, it's all screwed up. There's no way for these animals to be alive. No stomach. No reproductive apparatus. This animal is like a bad imitation of a shrimp.
Yet the shrimps are alive, Norman said.
Yeah, she said. They are. She seemed unhappy about it.
And the squid were perfectly normal inside.
Actually, they weren't. When I dissected one, I found that it lacked several important structures. There's a nerve bundle called the stellate ganglion that wasn't there.
Well?
And there were no gills, Norman. Squid possess a long gill structure for gas exchange. This one didn't have one. The squid had no way to breathe, Norman.
It must have had a way to breathe.
I'm telling you it didn't. We're seeing impossible animals down here. All of a sudden. Impossible animals.
She turned away from the high-intensity lamp, and he saw that she was close to tears. Her hands were shaking. She quickly dropped them into her lap.
You're really worried, he said.
Aren't you?
She searched his face.
Norman, she said. All this started when Harry came out of the sphere, didn't it?
I guess it did.
Harry came out of the sphere, and now we have impossible sea life. I don't like it. I wish we could get out of here. I really do.
Her lower lip was trembling. He gave her a hug and said gently, We can't get out of here.
I know, she said.
She hugged him back and began to cry, pushing her face into his shoulder.
It's all right. I hate it when I get this way, she said. I hate this feeling.
I know.
And I hate this place. I hate everything about it. I hate Barnes, and I hate Ted's lectures, and I hate Levy's stupid desserts. I wish I wasn't here.
I know. She sniffled for a moment, then abruptly pushed him away with her strong arms. She turned away, wiped her eyes.
I'm all right, she said.
Thanks.
Sure, he said.
She remained, turned away, her back to him.
Where's the damn Kleenex?
She found one, blew her nose.
You won't say anything to the others.
Of course not.
A bell rang, startling her. Jesus, what's that?
I think it's dinner, Norman said.
Dinner.
I don't know how you can eat those things, Harry said, pointing to the squid.
They're delicious, Norman said. Sautéed squid.
As soon as he had sat at the table, he became aware how hungry he was, and eating made him feel better. There was a reassuring normalcy about sitting at a table with a knife and fork in his hands. It was almost possible to forget where he was.
I especially like them fried, Tina said.
Fried calamari, Barnes said. Wonderful, my favorite.
I like them fried, too, Edmonds, the archivist, said.
She sat primly, very erect, eating her food precisely. Norman noticed that she put her knife down between bites.
Why aren't these fried? Norman said.
We can't deep fry down here, Barnes said. The hot oil forms a suspension and gums up the air filters, but sautéed is fine.
Well, I don't know about the squid, but the shrimps are great, Ted said.
Aren't they, Harry?
Ted and Harry were eating shrimp.
Great shrimp, Harry said.
Delicious.
You know how I feel, Ted said. I feel like Captain Nemo. Remember living underwater off the Bounty of the Sea?
20,000 leagues under the sea, Barnes said.
James Mason, Ted said. Remember how he played the organ? Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Bach, toccata and fugue in D minor.
And Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas was great.
Remember when he fought the giant squid? That was great. Kirk Douglas had an axe, remember?
Yeah, and he cut off one of the squid arms.
That movie, Harry said, scared the hell out of me. I saw it when I was a kid, and it scared the hell out of me.
I didn't think it was scary, Ted said.
You were older, Harry said.
Not that much older.
Yes, you were. For a kid, it was terrifying. That's probably why I don't like squid now.
You don't like squid, Ted said, because they're rubbery and disgusting.
Barnes said, that was the movie that made me want to join the Navy.
I can imagine, Ted said. So romantic and exciting.
And a real vision of the wonders of applied science.
Who played the professor in that?
The professor?
Yes, remember there was a professor?
I vaguely remember a professor, old guy.
Norman, you remember who was the professor?
No, I don't, Norman said.
Ted said, are you sitting over there keeping an eye on us, Norman?
How do you mean, Norman said.
Analyzing us, seeing if we're cracking up.
Yes, Norman said, smiling. I am.
How are we doing? Ted said.
I would say it is highly significant that a group of scientists can't remember who played the scientist in a movie they all love.
Well, Kirk Douglas was the hero, that's why.
The scientist wasn't the hero. Franchot Tone, Byrne said. Claude Rains?
No, I don't think so. Fritz, somebody.
Fritz Weaver? They heard a crackle and hiss, and then the sounds of an organ playing the Toccata and Fugue in D minor.
Great, Ted said. I didn't know we had music down here.
Edmonds returned to the table. There's a tape library, Ted. I don't know if this is right for dinner, Barnes said.
I like it,
Ted said.
Now, if we only had seaweed salad, isn't that what Captain Nemo served?
Maybe something lighter, Barnes said.
Lighter than seaweed?
Lighter than bark.
What was the submarine called?
Ted said.
The Nautilus, Edmund said. Oh, right, Nautilus.
It was the name of the first atomic submarine, too, launched in 1954, she said, and she gave Ted a bright smile.
True, Ted said, true.
Norman thought, he's met his match in irrelevant trivia. Edmonds went to the porthole and said, oh, more visitors.
What now?
Harry said, looking up quickly. Frightened, Norman thought. No, just quick, manic, interested.
They're beautiful, Edmonds was saying.
Some kind of little jellyfish all around the habitat. We should really film them.
What do you think, Dr. Fielding? Should we go film them?
I think I'll just eat now, Jane, Ted said a bit severely. Edmonds looked stricken, rejected. Norman thought, I'll have to watch that. She turned to leave. The others glanced toward the porthole, but nobody left the table.
Have you ever eaten jellyfish?
Ted said. I hear they're a delicacy. Some of them are poisonous, Beth said. Toxins in the tentacles.
Don't the Chinese eat jellyfish?
Harry said.
Yes,
Tina said. They make a soup, too. My grandmother used to make it in Honolulu.
You're from Honolulu?
Mozart would be better for dining, Brian said. Or Beethoven. Something with strings. This organ music is gloomy.
Dramatic, Ted said, playing imaginary keys in the air in time to the music, swaying his body like James Mason.
Gloomy, Barnes said. The intercom crackled.
Oh, you should see this, Edmund said over the intercom. It's beautiful.
Where is she? She must be outside, Barnes said. He went to the porthole.
It's like pink snow, Edmund said.
They all got up and went to the portholes. Edmunds was outside with the video camera. They could hardly see her through the dense clouds of jellyfish. The jellyfish were small, the size of a thimble, and a delicate glowing pink. It was indeed like a snowfall. Some of the jellyfish came quite close to the porthole. They could see them well.
They have no tentacles, Harry said. They're just little pulsating sacs.
That's how they move, Beth said. Muscular contractions expel the water.
Like squid, Ted said.
Not as developed, but the general idea.
They're sticky, Edmund said over the intercom. They're sticking to my suit.
That pink color is fantastic, Ted said. Like snow in the sunset.
Very poetic.
I thought so,
You would.
They're sticking to my faceplate, too, Edmund said. I have to pull them off. They leave a smeary streak.
She broke off abruptly, but they could still hear her breathing.
Can you see her? Ted said.
Not very well. She's there to the left.
Over the intercom, Edmund said, they seem to be warm. I feel heat on my arms and legs.
That's not right, Barnes said. He turned to Tina. Tell her to get out of there.
Tina ran from the cylinder toward the communications console. Norman could hardly see Edmunds anymore. He was vaguely aware of a dark shape, moving arms, agitated. Over the intercom, she said, the smear on the faceplate, it won't go away. They seem to be eroding the plastic. And my arms, the fabric is...
Tina's voice said, Jane,
get out of there.
On the double, Barnes shouted. Tell her on the double.
Edmunds' breathing was coming in ragged gasps. The smears... Can't see very well. I feel... Hurts. My arm's burning. Hurts. They're eating through...
Jane, come back. Jane, are you reading? Jane.
She's fallen down, Harry said.
Look, you can see her lying.
We have to save her, Ted said, jumping to his feet.
Nobody move, Barnes said.
But she's...
Nobody else is going out there, mister.
Edmunds' breathing was rapid. She coughed, gasped.
I can't... Oh, God!
Edmunds began to scream. The scream was high-pitched and continuous, except for ragged gasps for breath. They could no longer see her through the swarms of jellyfish. They looked at each other, at Barnes.
Barnes's face was rigidly set, his jaw tight, listening to the screams. And then, abruptly, there was silence.
The next messages. An hour later, the jellyfish disappeared as mysteriously as they had come. They could see Edmunds's body outside the habitat, lying on the bottom, rocking back and forth gently in the current. There were small ragged holes in the fabric of the suit.
They watched through the portholes as Barnes and the Chief Petty Officer, Teeny Fletcher, crossed the bottom into the harsh floodlights, carrying extra air tanks. They lifted Edmunds's body. The helmeted head flopped loosely back, revealing the scarred plastic faceplate dull in the light. Nobody spoke. Norman noticed that even Harry had dropped his manic affect. He sat unmoving, staring out the window. Outside, Barnes and Fletcher still held the body. There was a great burst of silvery bubbles which rose swiftly to the surface.
What are they doing?
Inflating her suit.
Why, aren't they bringing her back?
Ted said.
They can't, Tina said. There's nowhere to put her here. The decomposition byproducts would ruin our air.
But there must be some kind of a sealed container.
There isn't. Tina said.
There's no provision for keeping organic remains in the habitat.
You mean they didn't plan on anyone dying?
That's right, they didn't. Now there were many thin streams of bubbles rising from the holes in the suit toward the surface. Edmunds's suit was puffed, bloated. Barnes released it, and it floated slowly away, as if pulled upward by the streaming silver bubbles.
It'll go to the surface?
Yes, the gas expands continuously as outside pressure diminishes.
And what then?
Sharks, Beth said.
Probably.
In a few moments, the body disappeared into blackness beyond the reach of the lights. Barnes and Fletcher still watched the body, helmets tilted up toward the surface. Fletcher made the sign of the cross. Then they trudged back toward the habitat. A bell rang from somewhere inside. Tina went into D-Sill. Moments later, she shouted, Dr. Adams, more numbers! Harry got up and went into the next cylinder. The others trailed after him. Nobody wanted to look out the porthole any longer. Norman stared at the screen, entirely puzzled. But Harry clapped his hands in delight.
Excellent, Harry said. This is extremely helpful.
It is.
Of course, now I have a fighting chance.
You mean to break the code?
Yes, of course.
Why?
Remember the original number sequence? This is the same sequence.
It is.
Of course,
Harry said, except it's in binary. Binary, Ted said, nudging Norman. Didn't I tell you binary was important?
What's important, Harry said, is that this establishes the individual letter breaks from the original sequence.
Here's a copy of the original sequence, Tina said, handing them a sheet. 00032125252632 032629 301321 04261037 18 3016 06180821322 90330051822 04261013 08301621371 1604 08301621 1822 03301313042
Good, Harry said. Now you can see my problem at once. Look at the word. 000321 and so on. The question is, how do I break that word up into individual letters? I couldn't decide, but now I know.
How?
Well, obviously it goes 3, 21, 25, 25.
Norman didn't understand.
But how do you know that?
Look, Harry said impatiently. It's very simple, Norman. It's a spiral reading from inside to outside. It's just giving us the numbers in...
Abruptly, the screen changed again.
Narrator's note. The spiral that previously appeared on the screen in binary code has now changed into a spiral displaying the equivalent sequence, the original sequence, in ordinary decimal numbers.
Return to text.
There, is that clearer for you?
Norman frowned.
Look, it's exactly the same, Harry said. See? Center, outward. 00032125255. It's made a spiral moving outward from the center.
Yet?
Maybe it's sorry about what happened to Edmonds,
Harry said.
Why do you say that? Norman asked, staring curiously at Harry.
Because it's obviously trying very hard to communicate with us, Harry said. It's attempting different things.
Who is it?
It, Harry said, may not be a who.
The screen went blank, and another pattern appeared. Narrator's note. This pattern shows a spiral presenting the original sequence of coded decimal numbers repeated several times. Unlike the previous spiral patterns, this spiral progresses from the outside toward the center.
Return to text.
All right, Harry said. This is very good.
Where is this coming from?
Obviously from the ship.
But we're not connected to the ship. How is it managing to turn on our computer and print this?
We don't know.
Well, shouldn't we know? Beth said.
Not necessarily, Ted said.
Shouldn't we try to know?
Not necessarily. You see, if the technology is advanced enough, it appears to the naive observer to be magic.
There's no doubt about that.
For example, you take a famous scientist from our past. Aristotle, Leonardo da Vinci, even Isaac Newton. Show him an ordinary Sony color television set, and he'd run screaming, claiming it was witchcraft. He wouldn't understand it at all.
But the point, Ted said, is that you couldn't explain it to him either, at least not easily. Isaac Newton wouldn't be able to understand TV without first studying our physics for a couple of years. He'd have to learn all the underlying concepts. The electromagnetism, waves, particle physics. These would all be new ideas to him, a new conception of nature. In the meantime, the TV would be magic as far as he was concerned. But to us, it's ordinary. It's TV.
You're saying we're like Isaac Newton?
Ted shrugged.
We're getting a communication, and we don't know how it's done.
And we shouldn't bother to try and find out.
I think we have to accept the possibility, Ted said, that we may not be able to understand it.
Norman noticed the energy with which they threw themselves into this discussion, pushing aside the tragedy so recently witnessed. They're intellectuals, he thought, and their characteristic defense is intellectualization, talk, ideas, abstractions, concepts. It was a way of getting distance from the feelings of sadness and fear and being trapped.
Norman understood the impulse. He wanted to get away from those feelings himself.
Harry frowned at the spiral image. We may not understand how, but it's obvious what it's doing. It's trying to communicate by trying different presentations. The fact that it's trying spirals may be significant. Maybe it believes we think in spirals, or write in spirals.
Right, Beth said. Who knows what kind of weird creatures we are?
Ted said, if it's trying to communicate with us, why aren't we trying to communicate back? Harry snapped his fingers.
Good idea.
He went to the keyboard. There's an obvious first step, Harry said. We just send the original message back. We'll start with the first grouping, beginning with the double zeros.
I want it made clear, Ted said, that the suggestion to attempt communication with the alien originated with me.
It's clear, Ted, Barnes said.
Harry? Ted said.
Yes, Ted, Harry said. Don't worry, it's your idea.
Sitting at the keyboard, Harry typed 00032125252632. The numbers appeared on the screen. There was a pause. They listened to the hum of the air fans, the distant thump of the diesel generator. They all watched the screen. Nothing happened. The screen went blank and then printed out 00011321210518080122332. Norman felt the hair rise on the back of his neck. It was just a series of numbers on a computer screen, but it still gave him a chill. Standing beside him, Tina shivered.
He answered us.
Fabulous, Ted said. I'll try the second grouping now, Harry said.
He seemed calm, but his fingers kept making mistakes at the keyboard. It took a few moments before he was able to type 032629. The reply immediately came back. 00152608051801023.
Well, Harry said, looks like we just opened our line of communication.
Yes, Beth said. Too bad we don't understand what we're saying to each other.
Presumably it knows what it's saying, Ted said, but we're still in the dark.
Maybe we can get it to explain itself. Impatiently, Barnes said, what is this it you keep referring to?
Harry sighed and pushed his glasses up on his nose.
I think there's no doubt about that. It, Harry said, is something that was previously inside the sphere and that is now released and is free to act. That's what it is.
The Monster. Alarm. Norman awoke to a shrieking alarm and flashing red lights. He rolled out of his bunk, pulled on his insulated shoes and his heated jacket, and ran for the door, where he collided with Beth. The alarm was screaming throughout the habitat.
What's happening? He shouted over the alarm.
I don't know.
Her face was pale, frightened. Norman pushed past her. In the B cylinder, among all the pipes and consoles, a flashing sign winked, Life Support Emergency. He looked for Teeny Fletcher, but the big engineer wasn't there. He hurried back toward C cylinder, passing Beth again.
Do you know? Beth shouted. It's life support. Where's Fletcher? Where's Barnes?
I don't know. I'm looking.
There's nobody in B,
he shouted, and scrambled up the steps into D cylinder. Tina and Fletcher were there, working behind the computer consoles. The back panels were pulled off, exposing wires, banks of chips. The room lights were flashing red. The screens all flashed emergency life support systems.
What's going on? Norman shouted.
Fletcher waved a hand dismissingly.
Tell me.
He turned, saw Harry sitting in the corner near Edmonds's video section like a zombie, with a pencil and a pad of paper on his knee. He seemed completely indifferent to the sirens, the lights flashing on his face.
Harry!
Harry didn't respond. Norman turned back to the two women.
For God's sake, will you tell me what it is?
Norman shouted. And then the sirens stopped. The screens went blank. There was silence, except for soft classical music.
Sorry about that, Tina said.
It was a false alarm, Fletcher said.
Jesus Christ, Norman said, dropping into a chair. He took a deep breath. Were you asleep? He nodded. Sorry, it just went off by itself.
Jesus Christ.
The next time it happens, you can check your badge, Fletcher said, pointing to the badge on her own chest. That's the first thing to do. You see, the badges are all normal now.
Jesus Christ.
Take it easy, Norman, Harry said. When the psychiatrist goes crazy, it's a bad sign.
I'm a psychologist.
Whatever. Tina said, our computer alarm has a lot of peripheral sensors, Dr. Johnson. It goes off sometimes. There's not much we can do about it.
Norman nodded, went into E-Sill to the galley. Levy had made strawberry shortcake for lunch, and nobody had eaten it because of the accident with Edmonds. He was sure it would still be there, but when he couldn't find it, he felt frustrated. He opened cabinet doors, slammed them shut. He kicked the refrigerator door.
Take it easy, he thought. It was just a false alarm. But he couldn't overcome the feeling that he was trapped, stuck in some damned oversized iron lung, while things slowly fell apart around him. The worst moment had been Barnes's briefing, when he came back from sending Edmonds's body to the surface.
Barnes had decided it was time to make a little speech, deliver a little pep talk. I know you're all upset about Edmonds, he had said, but what happened to her was an accident. Perhaps she made an error of judgment in going out among jellyfish, perhaps not. The fact is, accidents happen under the best of circumstances, and the deep sea is a particularly unforgiving environment. Listening, Norman thought, he's writing his report, explaining it away to the brass. Right now, Barnes was saying, I urge you all to remain calm. It's 16 hours since the gale hit topside. We just set up a sensor balloon to the surface. Before we could make readings, the cable snapped, which suggests that surface waves are still 30 feet or higher, and the gale is still in full force. The weather satellite estimates were for a 60-hour storm on site, so we have 2 more full days down here. There's not much we can do about it. We just have to remain calm. Don't forget, even when you do go topside, you can't throw open the hatch and start breathing. You have to spend 4 more days decompressing in a hyperbaric chamber on the surface. That was the first Norman had heard of surface decompression. Even after they left this iron lung, they would have to sit in another iron lung for another 4 days?
I thought you knew, Barnes had said. That's SOP for saturated environments. You can stay down here as long as you like, but you have a 4-day decompress when you go back. And believe me, this habitat's a lot nicer than the decompression chamber. So enjoy this while you can.
Enjoy this while you can, he thought. Jesus Christ. Strawberry shortcake would help. Where the hell was Levy, anyway? He went back to D-Sill. Where's Levy?
Dunno, Tina said. Around here somewhere, maybe sleeping.
Nobody could sleep through that alarm, Norman said.
Try the galley?
I just did.
Where's Barnes?
He went back to the ship with Ted. They're putting more sensors around the sphere.
I told them it was a waste of time, Harry said.
So nobody knows where Levy is? Norman said.
Fletcher finished screwing the computer panels back on.
Doctor, she said, are you one of those people who need to keep track of where everyone is?
No, Norman said. Of course not.
And what's the big deal about Levy, sir?
I only wanted to know where the strawberry shortcake was.
Gone, Fletcher said promptly.
Captain and I came back from funeral duty and we sat down and ate the whole thing, just like that.
She shook her head.
Maybe Rose will make some more, Harry said.
He found Beth in her laboratory, on the top level of D-Sill. He walked in just in time to see her take a pill.
What was that?
Valium. God.
Where'd you get it?
Look, she said, don't give me any psycho talk about it. I was just asking.
Beth pointed to a white box mounted on the wall in the corner of the lab. There's a first aid kit in every cylinder. Turns out to be pretty complete, too.
Norman went over to the box, flipped open the lid. There were neat compartments with medicines, syringes, bandages.
Beth was right. It was quite complete. Antibiotics, sedatives, tranquilizers, even surgical anesthetics. He didn't recognize all the names on the bottles, but the psychoactive drugs were strong.
You could fight a war with the stuff in this kit.
Yeah, well, the Navy. There's everything you need here to do major surgery. Norman noticed a card on the inside of the box. It said, Med-Aid Code 103. Any idea what this means? She nodded. It's a computer code. I called it up. And? The news, she said, is not good. Is that right? He sat at the terminal in her room and punched in 103. The screen said, Hyperbaric Saturated Environment. Medical Complications. Major Fatal. 1.01. Pulmonary Embolism. 1.02. High Pressure Nervous Syndrome. 1.03. Aseptic Bone Necrosis. 1.04. Oxygen Toxicity. 1.05. Thermal Stress Syndrome. 1.06. Disseminated Pseudomonas Infection. 1.07. Cerebral Infarction. Choose one. Don't choose one, Beth said. Reading the details will only upset you. Just leave it at this. We're in a very dangerous environment. Barnes didn't bother to give us all the gory details. You know why the Navy has that rule about pulling people out within 72 hours? Because after 72 hours, you increase your risk of something called aseptic bone necrosis. Nobody knows why, but the pressurized environment causes bone destruction in the leg and hip. And you know why this habitat constantly adjusts as we walk through it? It's not because that's slick and high-tech. It's because the helium atmosphere makes body heat control very volatile. You can quickly become overheated and just as quickly overchilled. Fatally so. It can happen so fast you don't realize it until it's too late and you drop dead. And high-pressure nervous syndrome? That turns out to be sudden convulsions, paralysis, and death if the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere drops too low. That's what the badges are for, to make sure we have enough CO2 in the air. That's the only reason we have the badges. Nice, huh? Norman flicked off the screen, sat back. Well, I keep coming back to the same point. There's not much we can do about it now. Exactly what Barnes said. Beth started pushing equipment around on her countertop, nervously, rearranging things. Too bad we don't have a sample of those jellyfish, Norman said. Yes, but I'm not sure how much good it would do to tell the truth. She frowned, shifted papers on the counter again. Norman, I'm not thinking very clearly down here. How's that? After the accident, I came up here to look over my notes, review things, and I checked the shrimps. Remember how I told you they didn't have any stomach? Well, they do. I'd made a bad dissection out of the mid-sagittal plane. I just missed all the midline structures, but they're there all right. The shrimps are normal. And the squid? It turns out the one squid I dissected was a little anomalous. It had an atrophic gill, but it had one. And the other squid are perfectly normal, just what you'd expect. I was wrong. Too hasty. It really bothers me. Is that why you took the Valium? She nodded. I hate to be sloppy. Nobody's criticizing you. If Harry or Ted reviewed my work and found that I'd made these stupid mistakes... What's wrong with a mistake? I can hear them now. Just like a woman, not careful enough, too eager to make a discovery, trying to prove herself, too quick to draw conclusions. Just like a woman. Nobody's criticizing you, Beth. I am. Nobody else, Norman said. I think you ought to give yourself a break. She stared at the lab bench. Finally, she said, I can't. Something about the way she said it touched him. I understand, Norman said, and a memory came rushing back to him. You know, when I was a kid, I went to the beach with my younger brother Tim. He's dead now, but Tim was about 6 at the time. He couldn't swim yet. My mother told me to watch him carefully. But when I got to the beach, all my friends were there, body surfing. I didn't want to be bothered with my brother. It was hard because I wanted to be out in the big surf, and he had to stay close to shore. Anyway, in the middle of the afternoon, he comes out of the water screaming bloody murder, absolutely screaming, and tugging at his right side. It turned out he had been stung by some kind of a jellyfish. It was still attached to him, sticking to his side. Then he collapsed on the beach. One of the mothers ran over and took Timmy to the hospital before I could even get out of the water. I didn't know where he had gone. I got to the hospital later. My mother was already there. Tim was in shock. I guess the poison was a heavy dose for his small body. Anyway, nobody blamed me. It wouldn't have mattered if I had been sitting right on the beach watching him like a hawk. He would still have been stung. But I hadn't been sitting there. And I blamed myself for years, long after he was fine. Every time I'd see those scars on his side, I felt terrible guilt. But you get over it. You're not responsible for everything that happens in the world. You just aren't. There was a silence. Somewhere in the habitat, he heard a soft, rhythmic knocking, a sort of thumping, and the ever-present hum of the air handlers. Beth was staring at him. Seeing Edmonds die must have been hard for you. It's funny, Norman said. I never made the connection until right now. Blocked it, I guess. Want a Valium? He smiled. No. You looked as if you were about to cry. No, I'm fine. He stood up, stretched. He went over to the medicine kit and closed the white lid. Came back. Beth said, What do you think about these messages we're getting?
Beats me, Norman said.
He sat down again. Actually, I did have one crazy thought. Do you suppose the messages and these animals we're seeing are related? Why? I never thought about it until we started to get spiral messages. Harry says it's because the thing, the famous it, believes we think in spirals. But it's just as likely that it thinks in spirals, and so it assumes we do too. The sphere is round, isn't it? And we've been seeing all these radially symmetrical animals, jellyfish, squid. Nice idea, Beth said. Except for the fact that squid aren't radially symmetrical. An octopus is. And like an octopus, squid have a round circle of tentacles. But squid are bilaterally symmetrical, with a matching left and right side, the way we have. And then there's the shrimps. That's right, the shrimps. Norman had forgotten about the shrimps. I can't see a connection between the sphere and the animals, Beth said. They heard the thumping again, soft, rhythmic. Sitting in his chair, Norman realized that he could feel the thumping as well, as a slight impact. What is that, anyway? I don't know. Sounds like it's coming from outside. He had started toward the porthole when the intercom clicked, and he heard Barnes say, Now hear this. All hands to communications. All hands to communications. Dr. Adams has broken the code. Harry wouldn't tell them the message right away. Relishing his triumph, he insisted on going through the decoding process step by step. First, he explained, he had thought that the messages might express some universal constant or some physical law, stated as a way to open conversation. But, Harry said, it might also be a graphic representation of some kind, code for a picture, which presented immense problems. After all, what's a picture? We make pictures on a flat plane, like a piece of paper. We determine positions within a picture by what we call X and Y axes, vertical and horizontal. But another intelligence might see images and organize them very differently. It might assume more than three dimensions, or it might work from the center of the picture outward, for example. So the code might be very tough. I didn't make much progress at first. Later, when he got the same message with gaps between number sequences, Harry began to suspect that the code represented discrete chunks of information, suggesting words, not pictures. Now, word codes fall into several types, from simple to complex. There was no way to know immediately which method of encoding had been used. But then I had a sudden insight. They waited impatiently for his insight. Why use a code at all? Harry asked. Why use a code? Norman said. Sure. If you're trying to communicate with someone, you don't use a code. Codes are ways of hiding communication. So perhaps this intelligence thinks he is communicating directly, but is actually making some kind of logical mistake in talking to us.
He is making a code without ever intending to do so. That suggested the unintentional code was probably a substitution code with numbers for letters. When I got the word breaks, I began to try and match numbers to letters by frequency analysis. In frequency analysis, you break down codes by using the fact that the most common letter in English is E, and the second most common letter is T, and so on. So I looked for the most common numbers. But I was impeded by the fact that even a short number sequence, such as 232, might represent many code possibilities. 2 and 3 and 2, 23 and 2, 2 and 32, or 232. Longer code sequences had many more possibilities. Then, he said, he was sitting in front of the computer thinking about the spiral messages, and he suddenly looked at the keyboard. I began to wonder what an alien intelligence would make of our keyboard. Those rows of symbols on a device made to be pressed. How confusing it must look to another kind of creature. Look here, he said. The letters on a regular keyboard go like this. He held up his pad. Narrator's note. The pad shows a normal keypad laid out in four horizontal rows as follows. Row 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. Row 2, Tab, Q, W, E, R, T, Y, U, I, O, P. Row 3, caps, A, S, D, F, G, H, J, K, L, semicolon. Row 4, shift, Z, X, C, V, B, N, M, comma, period, question mark. Return to text. And then I imagined what the keyboard would look like as a spiral, since our creature seems to prefer spirals. And I started numbering the keys in concentric circles. It took a little experimentation, since the keys don't line up exactly, but finally I got it, he said. Look here, the numbers spiral out from the center. G is 1, B is 2, H is 3, Y is 4, and so on. See? It's like this. He quickly penciled in numbers. Narrator's note. With the numbers 1 through 15 penciled in over the normal keyboard layout, the following sequence emerges. G is 1, B is 2, H is 3, Y is 4, T is 5, F is 6, V is 7, N is 8, J is 9, U is 10, keypad number 7 is 11, keypad number 6 is 12, R is 13, D is 14, and C is 15. Return to text. They just keep spiraling outward. M is 16, K is 17, and so forth. So, finally, I understood the message. What is the message, Harry? Harry hesitated. I have to tell you, it's strange. How do you mean, strange? Harry tore another sheet off his yellow pad and handed it to them. Norman read the short message printed in neat block letters. Hello. How are you? I am fine. What is your name? My name is Jerry. End of side 4. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.